Thank you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our 16th edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast here on HawkeyeDrive.com. Usually I'm joined every week by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell. Unfortunately, Chris was not able to join us this week. He had something come up at the last minute here. So the second week in a row I'm doing this solo. And this week I'm really doing it solo here because we don't have any guests lined up with Iowa not playing. I'm going to just keep it really brief here for as far as getting through everything this week. I'll just start off by briefly recapping what happened last Friday in Lincoln between the Hawkeyes and the Nebraska Cornhuskers. And once again, second week in a row, I picked against Iowa. The Hawkeyes proved me wrong, and they did so in an emphatic fashion, leaving Lincoln with a 38-17 win over Nebraska, claiming the Heroes Trophy for the first time since this rivalry, if you will, got formed in 2011 following Nebraska becoming a member of the Big Ten. And really, it was a game that the Hawkeyes pretty much were in control of from start to finish. I thought the defense really set a tone early on, particularly the three linebackers, James Morris, Anthony Hitchens, Christian Kirksey. Those guys were all making plays. The very first two possessions Nebraska had the ball, Ron Kellogg III, their starting quarterback, threw two interceptions. The first one right to Anthony Hitchens when Iowa was in its Raider look on third down. The second one James Morris picked off, and it set up Iowa in pretty decent field position. They weren't able to capitalize on that, but they ended up being able to dictate the field position in that game when they were exchanging punts back and forth with the Huskers. Eventually, Iowa did crack. You had strike first. You had Jake Rudock throw a touchdown pass to C.J. Fedorowicz. It made it 7-0. Then in the second quarter, Iowa made it 14-0 when Mark Weissman scored. It ended up being from 1 yard out. He originally had about a 12-yard run that they said he was ruled down at the one. And actually, before that, was a very key play. You had Jordan Kanzeri caught a little dump off from Jake Rudock near the sidelines. Was able to cut back into the middle of the field where he had open field, got down at the 12. And that came at a very key point in the game because Iowa was struggling to move football offensively. And it was also a situation where the Hawkeyes had good field position but really weren't able to take advantage of it aside from the first touchdown to Fedorowicz. That play kind of changed the tempo because suddenly it was a two-possession game. Nebraska did drive late in the half to and got a field goal, made it 14-3 at halftime. Then they came out in the third quarter, went right down the field, got a touchdown, made it 14-10. But then Iowa responded back with a field goal, and then this is where you had the pass interference that was called, which led to Nebraska head coach Bo Pelini getting called for an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty because he took off his hat and he swung it the direction of the official that was the nearest to him, tacked on 15 yards. Iowa got a field goal from Mike Meyer, made it 17-10. And then later on, Nebraska had the ball again. Iowa got a stop. Then it was fourth down. They stopped the fake punt. First time since 2009 they were able to do that. Christian Kirksey got in on the tackle. The very next play, Rudock hit Kevontae Martin Manley wide open for a touchdown, made it 24-10. To me, that play was a backbreaker because at that point, the Hawkeyes pretty much seized momentum. Yes, Nebraska did score another touchdown and make it a 7-point game, but once that play where Rudock threw the touchdown to Kevontae took place, you didn't really get a sense that Nebraska was going to come back. It just seemed like Iowa was going to be in control. Even with C.J. Beathard in at quarterback after Rudock left the game with another knee injury, it sounds like he's okay. He talked after the game last Friday. It sounds like he should be good to go for the Hawkeyes' upcoming bowl game. But even with Beathard in, you felt that Iowa was going to be in control. And then late in the fourth quarter, you got another key run from Jordan Kanzeri to the left side following Brandon Sheriff. And he got down to the 2 yard line. And this was right after Louis Trinka-Passat recovered a fumble from Ron Kellogg III. Or I'm sorry, from Amir Abdullah. I beg your pardon. And then right after that big run by Kanzeri, Weissman scored again. That made it a two touchdown game. And then Beathard had the exclamation point, if you will, with another bootleg score. Made it 38-17. That was the final. Iowa now at 8-4. And I got to tell you, it's quite a turnaround. When you consider that this time a year ago, this team had just completed a 4-8 season that was pretty abysmal, especially the second half of the year. They lost six straight games. The fact that they were able able to come back, turn it around like they did. I think it speaks to what Coach Ferentz was able to do. I think it speaks to what his assistants were able to do. And I think, more importantly, it speaks to the leadership that the players have, particularly the upperclassmen. I mentioned the three linebackers, how all three of them played huge roles for Iowa in that game last Friday. And really, they all played huge roles for the Hawkeyes all season. You know, and then you could even look at a guy like Louis Trinka-Passat coming on along the defensive line, even Carl Davis for that matter. You could look at the secondary. In fact, B.J. Lowry had a pretty decent season. He ended up being named first team All-Big Ten by the media. John Loudermilk, I thought, got better as the season went on. You had a guy like Desmond King step up early in the year, and he held down that other corner spot as a true freshman. You look at the offensive side of the ball. Jake Rudock, when he was healthy, was able to have command. He showed poise. He didn't let the mistakes get to him. The running game, they eventually figured something out that worked once they got Jordan Canzieri more involved. And they found a way to utilize the tight ends. Really, this is one of those situations where I think the coaching deserves credit. The players deserve credit. And really, when I think about it, I wrote this last Friday after the game. It has me thinking right now about 2008, and I'm seeing a lot of parallels here. Because if you think back to that season, Iowa lost to Illinois in early November, was sitting at 5-4. They got that huge win over Penn State the following week at Kinnick Stadium. And from there, they went on a roll. They beat Purdue on Senior Day the following week. Then they went up to Minnesota, won that game 55-0. Then they went down to the Outback Bowl, manhandled South Carolina 31-10. Now you fast forward to now. They lose that game in early November to Wisconsin, a really good Wisconsin team. They beat Purdue the following week to get the bowl eligibility, sitting there at 6-4. Then coming out of a bye, they pull off that key win against Michigan, which I really think, in hindsight, obviously the last two games this season, these last two games they won, are the biggest victories of the year. But I think that Michigan game really set the tone for what ended up happening in Lincoln the following week, because it gave them a confidence that, hey, they could play with anybody and they can handle anybody, and they weren't faced going into Memorial Stadium. I think had this game been played earlier in the year, they might have been a little bit intimidated by that, especially if, let's say, this game was played before they went to Ohio State. I think the fact that they played that game and played as well as they did in that environment was also something that helped them going into this game against Nebraska. And really, if you think about it, this is as even a game as you could have anticipated coming in between these two teams. Nebraska was clearly the better team each of the last 2 years. Iowa more or less caught up to them, and, you know, at that point coming into last week. And then they were able to go in there and really dictate the game for the majority of the 60 minutes that were played. So, you know, it was a really impressive victory for Iowa. I don't want to say it was completely like that game against Minnesota in 2008, because obviously that was 55-0. This is 38-17. But the way they won, you sensed there was a point that once Iowa had the momentum, they weren't going to let go. And that's exactly what ended up being the case. And now they have that momentum, having won three straight, going into a bowl game here. And the way things are shaping up, it's really going to come down to how many Big Ten teams get in BCS bowls. Because if there are two of them, and then you have Wisconsin going to the Capital One Bowl, then the Outback Bowl is right there, just like 2008. And Iowa's going to have the best case. Between them, Nebraska, Minnesota, Michigan, the Hawkeyes beat all three of those teams head-to-head this season. They're sitting there at 8-4. They wouldn't be jumping anybody necessarily, because they have the same record as two other teams, and then they finished the game better than Michigan. I know that's not necessarily how bowls are decided as far as matchups are decided, but assuming Ohio State and Michigan State are both playing in BCS bowl games, Iowa is the best argument for that game on New Year's Day down in Tampa. They've done what they need. They're 5-3 in conference play. You look at the four games that Iowa's lost. If Ohio State and Michigan State both play in BCS bowl games, you factor that in, plus Northern Illinois, assuming they beat Bowling Green on Friday. That's three teams in BCS bowl games. Those are three of Iowa's four losses. And then the one that isn't, Wisconsin, would be in the Capital One Bowl. So they lost to four really good teams, and really, this is one of the first times, I think I said this before, but this is one of the first times I could sit back and think, you know, Iowa didn't ever lose that game that left you scratching your head. That's happened a few times in seasons past, and actually, you could say it's happened each of the last, I guess, since 2005, so the last eight seasons coming into this year. But I mentioned the four games they lost were to four really good teams. And then you look at those inferior opponents that they played, the teams like an Iowa State, a team like a Purdue, a team like a Western Michigan, a team like, I won't say Minnesota, but they manhandled the Golden Gophers that day, a team like Northwestern that didn't go to a bowl game, a team like Michigan that ended up regressing. Iowa won those games. They didn't have that game that left you thinking, you know, how did they lose? I mean, okay, you could sit there and say Northern Illinois was that case, but Northern Illinois, they're sitting there undefeated right now. It's not like that was a bad team. They didn't have that head-scratching loss. Or, you know, you could think back to, say, 2 years ago at this time when Iowa was 7-5 going to their second straight Insight Bowl. That team maybe could have been 9-3, except they lost two games to Iowa State and Minnesota, who were both – well, Iowa State went to a bowl game, but Minnesota, that was Jerry Kill's first season, and you're wondering, how does this happen? And I know that that was something that really angered the fan base because those were rivalry games. They went 3-1 in the rivalry games they had this year. The one that they didn't win was Wisconsin. But, again, Wisconsin went 9-3. They beat Iowa State. They beat Minnesota. They beat Nebraska. And not only that, they beat all three of those teams on the road, which, you know, I think that says, again, it says a lot about what they have in place right now. It's definitely a positive for them going into their bowl game, wherever it ends up being. Now, I mentioned the possibility of the Outback Bowl and how I feel that that's the best case scenario for Iowa right now. I feel that if they do end up going to that game, the way things are shaking out in the SEC, because that's the conference that would be featuring the opponent, it's kind of interesting right now because you have, obviously, we'll just run it down real quickly. You have Alabama and then whoever wins that game on Saturday between Missouri and Auburn. I think both those teams are going to clearly be in BCS bowl games. Which ones remains to be seen, but they're both going to be in BCS bowl games. Then you're going to have the loser of that Missouri-Auburn game. You're going to have South Carolina. You're going to have LSU, Texas A&M, Georgia. That's kind of the pool here. The Capital One gets the first pick. I would think they're going to take the loser of that Missouri-Auburn game, but the one other team that they could consider, given their rules and their guidelines, is South Carolina, who went 10-2, is currently the top 10 team in the BCS. They could take the Gamecocks. If that happens, then you're looking at the Missouri-Auburn loser going to the Cotton Bowl, because the SEC has a safety net rule in place where certain bowl games, whoever loses that SEC title game can't fall any further than a certain bowl, and this year it's the Cotton Bowl. So then you're looking at maybe a Missouri or an Auburn going to that game if South Carolina goes to Capital One. And then the other thing that I've been hearing recently out of South Carolina is if the Cotton Bowl is there for the Gamecocks, there's a mutual interest. And normally the Cotton Bowl takes the SEC West team. The Outback takes an SEC East. But there can be times where they can pull off a backroom deal, a negotiation of sorts, that allows them to swap. And if there is enough of a mutual interest in South Carolina's there, there's a good chance the Gamecocks end up going to Jerry World. So then you look at the Outback Bowl, your likely candidates are LSU, Texas A&M, and maybe to a slightly lesser extent Georgia. LSU has the best record of those three teams. The Tigers are 9-3. Texas A&M and Georgia both went 8-4 this year. However, here's the thing that I would point out is, yes, LSU has the best case, and they would travel. So you would have that factor in. However, it was just reported on Wednesday that Zach Mettenberger, LSU's quarterback, he got hurt in their last regular season game against Arkansas, had surgery done on his knee. He's not going to play for them in their bowl. And then you look at Georgia, they're already without Aaron Murray. So while LSU might be in the best position of those three teams to be there for the Outback Bowl, it wouldn't surprise me if the folks down there in Tampa decided, you know what, Texas A&M is the one healthy quarterback, and oh, by the way, he's a guy that won the Heisman Trophy last year, and he's a TV draw. So it wouldn't surprise me if it ended up being now that Texas A&M goes to that game. I know I had LSU in the recent bowl projections I put up on the site Tuesday, but things have changed, and it wouldn't surprise me. I'm not saying that that will happen for certain, but it wouldn't surprise me. Plus, you factor in, the last 3 years at least, I know, Mike Tirico and John Gruden, those are the guys that do the Monday night football games on ESPN. They've called the last three Outback Bowls, assuming that they're the announcers again for this year's Outback Bowl. You look at a guy like John Gruden, he is fascinated with quarterbacks. He has that whole quarterback show, you know, right before the NFL draft every spring, where he's talking to all these top guys, these top college QBs that are about to get picked, and he's picking their brains. You don't think he'd want to spend 3 hours talking about Johnny Manziel on New Year's Day? Because I could totally see that being the case. And then you factor in Iowa. And let's face it, yeah, there's going to be that question of, well, maybe Nebraska gets picked ahead of them because the Huskers have never been there. I think Iowa answered that question with the head-to-head victory last week. And let's face it, Hawkeye fans are going to travel to Florida. They will. They would go there for the Outback Bowl on New Year's Day. So I don't think the Outback Bowl would have to worry about attendance in that regard, especially if you have Texas A&M being the team that has that newness factor of never having been to the game before, and maybe their fans make the trip, especially assuming that it was Johnny Manziel's final football game. So Iowa, Texas A&M, Iowa, LSU, if they decide to just kind of stick with, you know, what the standings look like and say, you know what, yeah, Zach Mettenberger might not be playing, but LSU, you know that their fans are going to travel. They would be a good invite to bring down to Tampa for that game. So if Iowa ends up there, I think you're looking at maybe one of those two teams being their opponent. Now, let's say the Big Ten doesn't get two BCS teams. Let's say Ohio State beats Michigan State so soundly that the Spartans drop out of the top 14 of the BCS, which is where they need to be in order to ensure themselves of a trip to the Rose Bowl. Then it gets interesting, because then the next teams in line, or the next bowl games in line, rather, are the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl, which Iowa's been to two of the last 3 years, back when it was called the Insight. You have the Gator Bowl, and then you have the Texas Bowl. Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl right now is in a position where it could have Nebraska-Texas, or Nebraska-Oklahoma, or Michigan-Texas. And when you factor in that this is the last year that they have a Big Ten tie-in, I could see them not bringing back Iowa and going for that TV draw, which then leaves the Gator Bowl. I would think that if the Outback Bowl passed on Iowa, that the Gator is where they would end up being. And in that event, I think Georgia would be the likely opponent. It's not to say that that will happen, but there's a case. Now, in the event that Nebraska and Michigan both get picked ahead of Iowa, then you look at the Texas Bowl. And the likely opponent there would be Texas Tech, unless the Big 12 gets two BCS teams. And in that case, there's a vacancy because everybody else would be moving up and the Big 12 only has six bowl eligible teams. And maybe that's where a team like Notre Dame comes into play. Possibly. I'm not saying that that would happen, but that's something to consider if in the unlikely event. And I'm saying unlikely because the odds of it are pretty slim, but it's not impossible if Iowa fell all the way down to that game. It's going to be interesting to see what happens here over the course of the weekend, obviously. And then Sunday, I know Iowa's already announced that there's going to be a press conference in place with Ferentz and Barta as far as the announcement of where they're going and their reaction to it. And, yeah, I mean, you can pretty much get an idea of what it's going to be. I think the fascination is going to be more toward who the opponent is, because it's obviously going to be a team that you don't see the Hawkeyes playing on a regular basis. And I mentioned how where Iowa ends up is going to hinge on what happens Saturday night in Indianapolis. And I think this is a good segue now for us to discuss that game between Ohio State and Michigan State, because these are two teams that Iowa played this season. And I would say that Michigan State had the best defense that I saw this year. Ohio State had the best offense that I saw this year. And as evident, they led the Big Ten in just about every single offensive and defensive category, respectively. Looking at those matchups, it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be fascinating to watch a guy like Braxton Miller and Carlos Hyde go up against a defense that has the likes of guys like Max Bulla and Darquise Denard and Isaiah Lewis. I'm going to be very intrigued to see what strength takes over in that game, you know, because I don't think Ohio State's played anybody with a defense like Michigan State, aside from maybe Wisconsin. Maybe. And even then, Wisconsin gave Ohio State, well, I guess aside from last week's game between Ohio State and Michigan, the Badgers gave the Buckeyes one of their toughest tests all season. Conversely, I don't think Michigan State's defense has gone up against a team that has an offense like Ohio State's. And you factor in that teams like Indiana and Nebraska were both able to put up points. They both obviously turned the ball over a lot against Michigan State's defense as well, because they're a very opportunistic group. But They were both able to move the ball. So initially, I'm thinking that Ohio State might have some success. The question is going to be, can they come away with touchdowns like they've been able to against most of the teams they've played this season? You flip the script here. You look at Michigan State's offense against Ohio State's defense. This, to me, is the key, because you have to think Ohio State, even with as good a defense as Michigan State has, you have to think that Ohio State's going to be able to put up points. And the question is going to be, can Michigan State, you know, play catch-up? I don't know if they can, because Ohio State is a pretty good defense themselves. Features a guy in Ryan Shazier, who I think is the best linebacker in the conference this year. I know Chris Borland won it, but if I had a vote for that, I would have given it to Ryan Shazier. And he's a guy that I consider an All-American. I know when I filled out a ballot for that for the Football Writers Association of America, I included him on my ballot. You look at and you factor in Ohio State having guys in their secondary like Bradley Roby. You look at their defensive line, guys like Adolphus Washington and Nate Spence. That's a good defense. You know, obviously Iowa's offense for most of that game had its way with the Buckeyes, but eventually Ohio State's defense is able to make plays in that game. You go back to October, and they've been doing that most of the year. Yes, Michigan put up 41 points on them last week, but they got the stop on that two-point conversion when Michigan went for two. You know, it's not so much about how many points you give up, but it's are you making the plays at the right moments? And both of these teams that are playing this game have done that over the course of the year. And I can sit here right now and say you got the two best teams in the conference going toe-to-toe Saturday night at Lucas Oil Stadium, and I think it's going to be great. Now, obviously, there's a lot at stake for both of these teams. Ohio State, Buckeyes win, they're probably playing for the national championship, because I cannot see how a SEC team with one loss sleeps them. I just can't see it. I don't think you can justify an undefeated Ohio State that's done everything that's been asked of them, especially if they beat a top 10 team like Michigan State Saturday night on a neutral field. I don't see how you could deny the Buckeyes a chance in that title game against presumably Florida State, assuming they beat Duke. Conversely, Michigan State, they're going to have the Rose Bowl at stake. And yes, Pasadena might still be there for the Spartans even if they lose, but they're going into the game to win. And if they do win, that will pretty much guarantee the Big Ten getting two BCS spots, because I can't see the Orange Bowl passing up on a 12-1 Ohio State. I just can't see it. You know, at that point in time, Alabama's going to be gone, because they're going to probably go to the Sugar Bowl and replace whoever wins that Auburn-Missouri game. And, you know, a 12-1 Ohio State would be sitting right there for the Orange Bowl. I don't see them turning that down. Now, if the Buckeyes win, the thing to watch Sunday night will be how far Michigan State drops in the BCS standings. Because if the Spartans are still in the top 14, the Rose Bowl is going to take them. I will guarantee you the Rose Bowl takes them. If they can take a Big Ten team and a Pac-12 team, and they can have that matchup, especially for the 100th edition of the Rose Bowl, they're not going to turn that down. Okay, if Michigan State is 13th in the BCS standings, they're going to Pasadena. If they're 14th, they're going to Pasadena. If they're 15th, they're not. That's the key. And assuming Michigan State goes to the Rose Bowl, as I said before, I think what would happen is Wisconsin would move up to the Capital One, and then there's the Outback, and I think they would take Iowa. I really do believe they would take Iowa. I'm not basing this off any conversations I've had with anybody or anything like that. It's just a hunch that I have. I think that at that point in time, they would value taking a marquee Big Ten team, which you could argue Iowa is at 8-4 when their three losses in conference play are to the three teams ahead of them. And then, again, you throw in the aspect of maybe they go for Texas A&M. There's the TV's draw. There's the TV draw, and Iowa would bring the fan draw, would bring the butts to the seats. That's the kind of matchup that they're going to be looking for. I think at that point, if there's two BCS teams, I think Iowa goes to Tampa. If there's only one, it's probably Jacksonville, maybe Houston. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say go and figure out your travel just yet. I would still wait until Sunday, but just to give you an idea of what's kind of in play here, I think Tempe is the least likely scenario, mainly because if Nebraska's sitting there for them, I don't think they're going to turn down the Huskers. But I also think if Iowa's already taken, it's between Nebraska and Michigan, there's also a slight possibility they go for Michigan instead of Nebraska, especially if they get Texas in that game. These are all things to keep an eye on. It's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out. And, again, that should be a really good game Saturday night in Indianapolis between the Buckeyes and Spartans. And it's obviously one that's going to have major impact across all of college football, not just in the Big Ten. We'll jump right into the pick 'em here now, since we obviously don't have a guest for this week. I know Chris wasn't around last week, and I didn't get a chance to get his picks in because I got the email from him shortly after I recorded it. But as far as our head-to-head was concerned, he went 9-1. The only game he got wrong was the Arizona-Arizona State game. He picked the Wildcats to win. The Sun Devils won big. Meanwhile, I went 5-5. That includes Iowa losing to Nebraska. It also included A&M. I had them beat Missouri. That didn't happen. We both had Wisconsin. I'm sorry. He went 8-2 because we both had Wisconsin winning and they lost. But he had Auburn winning that game over Alabama. That ended up being intriguing. He had UCLA beating USC. I did not. I thought the Trojans would win. So, yeah, Chris had the better of me this past week. He went 8-2 for clarity's sake now. I went 5-5. Our winner, I believe, went 6-4. He actually won a three-way tiebreaker because he was the only person who picked Iowa among the people that went. Most of you who sent in entries last week were closer to my record than Chris's. Nate Botcher, congratulations on winning last week's pick'em. I know I sent your prize out here earlier this week. It should be on its way to you here. Hope you enjoy that. And just a reminder to everybody tuning in here, you can participate in this week's pick'em. All you got to do is on HawkeyeDrive.com, you'll see at the top 24 Heisman Road, hover over that. You'll see the pick'em page. Click on that. List of 10 games is there, including Saturday night's Big Ten Championship game. Email your picks to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score with that Big Ten title game between Ohio State and Michigan State. I'm going to use that like I would use Iowa games in the event of any tiebreakers that may occur. And we'll just get right to it here because Chris did email me his picks before I started recording this. And we're going to start with the first game on our docket, which is the MAC Championship game. You have Northern Illinois, ranked 14th in the country. They're going up there to Detroit to take on Bowling Green, who won the MAC East. This is a very interesting game just in the sense that Bowling Green has a decent enough defense statistically that they can hang with a team like Northern Illinois. That being said, I think the Huskies are going to win. I think Jordan Lynch is going to be a guy that you see in New York City next week for the Heisman Trophy ceremony. I don't think he'll win it, but I think he'll be there. And with that being said, and assuming that that happens, Northern Illinois will more than likely end up in the Fiesta Bowl because they get the last at-large selection. So the Huskies should probably go there to take on whoever wins the Big 12. I will say, if you're a fan of any Big Ten team that has a shot at a bowl game that wants to move up the totem pole, if you will, particularly if you're a team like a Michigan State or a Wisconsin or an Iowa, Bowling Green winning Friday night might not be such a bad thing because then Northern Illinois can't leapfrog Michigan State in the BCS standings in the event the Spartans lose Saturday night's game to Ohio State. So something to consider. Not only that, they would probably drop out of the top 16 altogether, which is what they need to be in order to be eligible for a BCS game. And that would open up a spot for another AQ conference to take an at-large bid that wouldn't be going to Northern Illinois any longer. So I think that would increase the odds of Michigan State being in the Rose Bowl regardless of what happens on Saturday. Just something to keep in mind. Moving along now into Saturday's games. I forgot to mention that MAC championship game's Friday night. Now moving into Saturday's games, you got Bedlam, number 18 Oklahoma. At least they're 18th in the AP poll. They're 17th in the BCS standings. They go to Stillwater to take on Oklahoma State, who's ranked 6th in both polls. Oklahoma State, if the Cowboys win, they win the Big 12. They win a share of the Big 12. They're going to have the head-to-head on either Baylor or Texas, so they'll get the conference's bid to go to the Fiesta Bowl, where they would probably play Northern Illinois if NIU wins Friday night. That's what's at stake there. If the Sooners win and pull the upset, then you're looking at the winner of that Texas-Baylor game, which we'll get to in a bit, winning the conference outright. That being said, I think Oklahoma State's going to win this game. Both teams are coming off byes. If this game is being played last week after Oklahoma State won that game over Baylor, I would say that they're more suspect of being upset here. And they might still be anyway just because it's a rivalry game. But I just have a hard time seeing Oklahoma State losing this game because they've been in a similar situation before. You go back to 2 years ago, the last time this game was in Stillwater. They had the Big 12 at stake. They actually had a shot at the national championship game at stake at that time. And they crushed the Sooners big time in that game in prime time. This is an 11 a.m. game. I think the Cowboys are going to handle their business again here and lock up that spot in Glendale on New Year's Day. And I forgot to mention, too, Chris, I mentioned how he did send me his picks. He agrees with me so far on the two games we've discussed. He has Northern Illinois beating Bowling Green and Oklahoma State winning as well over Oklahoma. Now moving into a Conference USA championship game happening Saturday morning down in Houston, you have Marshall, taking on Rice. Both teams are 9-3. Both went 7-1 in league play. Marshall, you go back to earlier in the season, one of their three losses was a triple overtime game against Virginia Tech up in Blacksburg. And then Rice, one of their three losses was the very first game of the season against Texas A&M, which you may or may not remember is the game that Johnny Manziel was suspended for the first half because of the whole autograph situation that was big news back in August. I know this game is being played on Rice's home field, but I think Marshall's a better team. The Thunder and Herder are my pick to win Conference USA at the beginning of the season. I have no reason to go against that now. I think Marshall gets the road victory, and Chris agrees with me on this one. So we both like the Thunder and Herd. Being played in Texas as well, up in Dallas on Saturday morning, you have Central Florida ranked 15th in the AP poll. They're ranked 16th, I believe, in the BCS standings. They're playing SMU in the American Athletic Conference, AAC regular season finale for both. Central Florida might already have a BCS bid locked up by this point because Thursday night Louisville and Cincinnati play. If Louisville wins, Central Florida has a head-to-head on Louisville in the event they were to lose this game. So Central Florida would go to a BCS bowl. Probably the Sugar Bowl if Northern Illinois wins tomorrow night or Friday. Yeah, on Friday night. If Cincinnati wins, however, they still have an outside shot at taking the BCS bid away from UCF if they were to lose here. Southern Methodist, meanwhile, sitting at 5-6, they need to win this game in order to be bowl eligible. I think SMU will make it an interesting game because both teams have good air attacks, but the problem is SMU does not have a good pass defense, and I think Blake Bortles is going to pick them apart. And the other thing I would just say, too, about Central Florida that I've been impressed with when I've watched them play this year is the fact that when they do find themselves in tough situations, the last week's game against South Florida is a perfect example of this. They were down late. They found a way to win. You go back to the game against Temple earlier in November. They found a way to win that game. You know, they were trailing late, and it looked like that was a lost cause. They found a way to come back and get that victory on the road. I think this could be a very close game, but I think UCF will prevail, and I think you're going to see them in either the Sugar or Fiesta Bowl, depending on what happens in the Mac title game Friday night. So I like the Knights there, and I know Chris has UCF winning as well, so that's another game we agree on. Now you get into the late afternoon games on Saturday. You have Texas going on the road to Baylor. Texas, both teams are coming off victories last week. Texas destroyed Texas Tech on Thanksgiving in Austin. Meanwhile, Baylor got a pretty big road victory at TCU last week. They won 41-38. This game is being played in Waco. The Bears are ranked 9th in both the AP and BCS standings. Texas is 23rd in the AP poll, 25th in the BCS standings. This is a game, as I said before, if Oklahoma does pull the upset of Okie State, then the winner of this game is going to win the Big 12 outright and go to the Fiesta Bowl. I don't think that's going to be the case here. However, Baylor might have an outside shot at a BCS bowl game still, depending on how things shake out. This game being played in Waco, I've said before how Baylor's a team that seems to thrive when they're in their own surroundings and they're just a more comfortable team. You saw it when they beat Oklahoma earlier last month. That game is played in Waco in primetime, and they delivered in front of the home crowd. I expect the Bears to do it again here Saturday. I think they get this victory over Texas, which would drop the Longhorns down to the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl in Tempe. And, again, this is another game Chris agrees with me on, so we both like Baylor. Now you got the SEC title game being played in Atlanta Saturday afternoon. Missouri ranked 5th, Auburn ranked 3rd. The winner of this game will for sure go to the Sugar Bowl, could maybe go to the BCS title game if either Ohio State or Florida State loses Saturday night. The way I see this playing out, and you know, Auburn, you know, it's a great story what's going on down there. The fact that they had this turnaround that they had going from 3-9 under Gene Chizik a year ago to 11-1 under Gus Malzahn. Gus Malzahn's my national coach of the year. I know David Cutcliffe has done great things at Duke this year, and Gary Pinkel's done a great job at Missouri. But the way that Auburn has responded to Malzahn is better than even I thought it was going to be coming into the year. And they find ways to win those games against teams like Georgia and Alabama, and they win the SEC West. I don't think anyone saw that coming in at the beginning of the season. However, I think Missouri wins this game on Saturday. And the reason I think the Missouri Tigers win this game is because they've done some things here late in the year that I wasn't expecting them to do. They go into Ole Miss, win that game. They beat A&M at home last Saturday, a game I thought they would lose, and put South Carolina in this game on Saturday. That didn't end up being the case. Missouri, 11-1, they dominated the SEC East this year. And, you know, aside from that South Carolina game, which, by the way, they lost in double overtime. They lost on a missed field goal. They were literally a chip shot missed field goal that hit the left upright away from possibly being undefeated at this point in time. I think Missouri's a much more talented team than people are giving them credit for. And they have a defense that could stop Auburn's run. Auburn is a lot more of a run-oriented team than they are throwing the ball. Now, if Auburn discovers any sort of balance in their offense, then Missouri might be in trouble because their pass defense has had some issues. But if Auburn pretty much relies on its strength of running the football, I think Missouri is going to be okay against it. I don't see Auburn going for 296 yards like they did against Alabama last week. And conversely, I think Missouri is going to be able to move the ball on Auburn's defense. And you look at guys like James Franklin. You look at a guy like Dorial Green-Beckham. I think he could present matchup nightmares for Auburn's secondary. I just have a feeling Missouri is going to pull this one out. I think they win this game. I think they win the SEC. And I'm going to say, well, I'll get to where I think they're going to end up being here in a little bit. But I will say Chris agrees with me on this game as well. So we both have Mizzou beating Auburn. Now you get into the game Saturday night, the Pac-12 championship, being played at Sun Devil Stadium in Tempe because Arizona State had the best record in the conference. They went 8-1. Stanford went 7-2 in league play, even though Stanford beat them head-to-head. But nevertheless, you have the Cardinal ranked 7th. The Sun Devils ranked 11th. Winner of this game is for sure going to the Rose Bowl. The loser maybe is in that at-large pool still, but they're going to have 3 losses. Both these teams already have 2 losses. The loser is going to have 3. I think whoever loses this game might end up dropping out of the top 14, which would mean that the Pac-12 only gets 1 BCS team. Arizona State, I've been impressed with what they've been able to do here lately. The fact that they went into UCLA like they did a few weeks ago to win the division outright and then to absolutely destroy Arizona last week. It's in their regular season finale. They have this game at home, so I think that Arizona State will keep it close. However, I go back to the fact that when these teams played in Palo Alto back in September, Stanford absolutely manhandled them. Yes, the final score was, I think it was an 11-point difference, but Arizona State got a lot of points late in that game when the outcome was well in hand for Stanford. Stanford absolutely dominated the line of scrimmage that day, and it was a situation where they were able to have their way, kind of like they did against Oregon more recently. I think Stanford is still going to be able to do some of those same things. Arizona State will keep it a closer game. I don't think Stanford's going to blow them out, but I do expect the Cardinal to win because they've been in this situation before, and I expect them to thrive. And I think you're going to see David Shaw and his team playing in the Rose Bowl for the second year in a row. So I like Stanford here. Chris, this is one game that we disagree on. He's got the Sun Devils winning this. So for those keeping score here, he's got Arizona State. I got Stanford. Now you get into the ACC championship game. Florida State, now number one team in the country. They're going to be playing Duke, who won the Coastal Division outright. They're ranked 20th. Obviously, if the Seminoles win, they play for the national championship. And I think that that's exactly what's going to happen. They're a 29-point favorite here. I don't know if Duke's going to lose this game by 29 points. I think they're a better team than some are giving them credit for. I think that they could at least, in terms of the spread, I think that they'll be able to keep it close. But Florida State's clearly a better team, and I think Duke's going to struggle moving the ball in the Seminoles' defense, which is why I feel Florida State's going to prevail. You know, Duke's defense might be able to keep a minute, but I feel like they're only going to be able to keep a minute for so long. I just have concerns of their offense being able to move the ball on Florida State, which is why I think the Seminoles win, and Chris agrees with me on this one with Florida State winning and playing in the national title game. Now, late Saturday night, you got the Mountain West Championship game. It features Utah State against Fresno State. This game is being played at Fresno State. The Bulldogs suffered their first loss last week at the hands of San Jose State, and as a result, they're no longer in the conversation for a BCS Bowl. The winner of this game goes to the Las Vegas Bowl. Utah State ended up winning its division despite having Chucky Keaton get hurt in early October and be missing the rest of the season with an injury. And this is a team that, you know, was coached by Gary Anderson. It was the Wisconsin head coach. This is his guys last year. They found a way to respond and overcome that adversity, and they put themselves in a position to play in this game on Saturday night. However, the fact that it is in Fresno, the fact that I think Fresno State's going to want to get that bad taste out of their mouth – from a week ago. I have concerns that maybe Utah State could pounce on them early, but I think over the course of 60 minutes, I feel Derek Carr is going to be able to figure it out and get the ball to his playmakers, and Fresno State's going to put up points. And at the end of the day, I think Fresno State prevails in this game, and this is another one that Chris agrees with me on, so we both like Fresno State to win. And now you have the Big Ten championship game. Ohio State, ranked number 2. Michigan State, ranked number 10. Saturday night, Lucas Oil Stadium, Indianapolis, Indiana. Game's on Fox, 7 p.m. Central kickoff. Chris says Ohio State winning this game. I do as well. I think the Buckeyes beat the Spartans. I'm going to say the final will be 28-20. I'm basing that final prediction off of what I saw from both teams this season. Michigan State clearly has the best defense in the Big Ten and arguably the best defense in the country. Ohio State has the best offense in the Big Ten, one of the top offenses in the country. But I go back to what I said before. I think the game is going to be decided by what Michigan State's offense does against Ohio State's defense. And what I think is going to happen is at some point Ohio State will be able to move the ball on Michigan State and be able to score points. The question is going to be, can the Spartans' defense create turnovers like they have most of the year? And can Michigan State capitalize off of those turnovers? In other words, when the Spartans do have the ball, can they get 7 and not have to settle for field goals? Because you can't settle for field goals against a team like Ohio State. You just can't do it. You can't. If you play with that sort of fire, you're going to get burned by Braxton Miller and Carlos Hyde. And I just feel like it's going to reach a point where Ohio State's defense, kind of like that Iowa game, they're going to be able to make some adjustments. They're going to be able to get a few key stops here and there. And that's when the momentum is going to be in Ohio State's favor. And I think that they'll ultimately prevail. I think this is going to be a close game that, you know, gets decided in the fourth quarter. I think Michigan State will hang around. And as a result of me saying this, I think Michigan State will do enough to remain in the top 14 here and go to the Rose Bowl. But as far as them actually winning the game, I don't know if I see that happening. I think Ohio State wins mainly because I think that they're, as long as they're able to take care of the football when they are on the field, that's the other thing too, is I think Michigan State's got to be able to get a ground game going against Ohio State's defense, because the best offense for them is keeping Braxton Miller and Carlos Hyde on the sidelines. If they can't do that and you see them on the field and they get a chance to tire out Michigan State's defense, I think that they can move the ball and score. And I go back to when Iowa played Michigan State. The Hawkeyes were able to move the ball on Michigan State for a brief while there in the second quarter because they pushed the tempo. They pushed the tempo. I think Ohio State's going to do that for more than 6 minutes here. I think they're probably going to do that for the majority of the game. And again, as long as they don't turn the ball over 5 times like Nebraska did when they played Michigan State, I think they're going to be able to score points. I think they're going to be able to stay on the field. And it's going to put pressure on Michigan State's offense to try and play catch-up, and I just don't know if they're capable of doing that. You know, Michigan State, great team, great story. Mark D'Antonio, I think, is clearly the coach of the year in the conference this season. And because, let's face it, anytime you have an undefeated Big Ten team that's not Michigan or Ohio State, the award's going to go to that coach. And perfect example is when Iowa went undefeated in 2002 in Big Ten play. Kirk Ferentz won coach of the year that year. And you had the same deal here with D'Antonio. They've had a great year, and I think that they're going to be, on New Year's Day, they're going to be smelling roses and playing in the granddaddy of them all against Stanford. But I got Ohio State winning this game. I see the Buckeyes also making a trip to Pasadena for a game 5 nights later against Florida State in the national championship game. I'm going to say Ohio State wins 28-20. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. Just a reminder, we offer a 3-day free trial for those who are interested in becoming members of our site. And we also have monthly and yearly subscriptions, $9.99 a month, $89.99 a year. Payments are recurring. You sign up and become a subscriber, you have access to everything on the site that's both free and premium. I will be in Des Moines on Saturday covering an Iowa basketball game, so I won't be able to watch that Ohio State-Michigan State game, but I'll have coverage of that, as well as basketball coverage here throughout the course of the month. And then, of course, Sunday, we'll find out what bowl game Iowa's in. Hopefully, Chris is able to join me here for our final podcast of the year, which will be sometime before Christmas here. It won't be next week, but we'll probably do it maybe 2 weeks from now, sometime before the holidays. We'll break down Iowa's bowl game against whoever it ends up being. And we'll also preview the all the other bowl games featuring Big Ten teams and any other top 25 matchups. So hopefully he's back with me for that. I want to thank you all for tuning in this week and for putting up with me trying to do this podcast solo here this week. Like I said, hopefully Chris is back for our final one here later this month. And for him, I'm Brendan Stiles. Enjoy the game Saturday night if you watch it on TV, and we'll be back with you later this month to discuss Iowa's bowl game. Take care.